Welcome to the Expansive Podcast, where we explore the frontiers of personal growth, business innovation, and technology. We believe that growth and progress come from expanding our minds, exploring new possibilities, and embracing change. Welcome to this week's pod. And this week, we are doing something a little special, something that is a tribute to an incredibly important part of The Expansive. And it's an emotional podcast, and I imagine it will become quite emotional as we go through this. And if you follow our socials and follow Eric's socials, you'll know that we had a major tragedy a couple of weeks ago. And we want to have an episode that's focused solely on the tribute to Axel. And Axel was Eric's pup and firstborn furry child. And he was often part of the pod. And you would often hear him barking and his tail wagging and his feet walking on the ground, bugging Eric to go for a walk while we're in the pod. And often used to even bark at the right time when we when we spoke about certain things. But Axel unfortunately passed away. And we've actually been delaying recording a pod for the last few weeks to process what has happened. But we feel a deep urge to have a tribute pod to Axel, our friend, and Axel, Eric's best friend. So Eric, I don't know how you're feeling, but tell us a little bit about what's going on for you.
Well, first of all, dude, it's good to be back with you on the pod. It's been a while since we've connected around this. So it's good to be back. When we were talking about what to talk about today, you know, obviously there are many things that kind of are top of mind for us just regarding the work that we do, but there is this big thing that's been looming, which has been that Axel is not with us anymore. And it's been one of the most like painful times in my life. One of the most painful things I've ever experienced. For context, never had an immediate family member or a close friend or anyone like that pass away. And so losing Axel has been pretty devastating, and it's like, it's gutted us, you know, like as a family as well. And so we were talking about what to talk about today on the pod, and we thought like it's a good idea just to process a little bit around what's happened, because we both have this deep love for dogs as it is. And then on top of that, Axel, like you said, was the very first pup that Dan and I got together. And it actually, like she said it very well, that he turned us into a family. That it was the two of us for a long time. And then when he came around, he turned us into a family. And as a result of him being in our lives as well, Jaeger eventually also became part of us. So he was this catalyst for so many things that happened in our lives. And to give a bit of a quick background for everyone who doesn't know Axel. So, you know, and just actually before I get to that, let me just say that the outpouring of love has been incredible. Like I've literally received hundreds and hundreds of messages that I could never, ever get to. And it's been amazing to see people, I think, understand that these days your dog and your pet isn't just that. You know, there's such a much deeper connection. And it's really come through in the way that people have responded to us. But so Axel was only 5 years old, and he moved with us from one space in Joburg to another space in Joburg to Cape Town. And really everything in my life was built around him. He was my best friend. He was like a soul dog. I don't know how else to describe it, that he was bonded not only to my heart, but to my soul. And everything revolved around them. You know, when people were speaking to us about December, like, what are you doing for December? everyone has these plans to go away. And like the only thing I was looking forward to was spending more time with them on the beach and taking them to more places. Whenever Dan was sitting down to visit or to look at, like, you know, where will we go? It was always built around them. So you have to understand our entire lives are set up and built around these two pups. So about a year ago, Axel had a small growth on his paw. And the doctor looked at it and he diagnosed it as like a squamous cell cancer. And he was able to take a lot of it out. So he had to end up like amputating a toe, but he ended up getting a lot of the cancer out. And then he was fine. You know, like it was a very painful period because we saw him suffering a lot and he was in lots of pain, but he was always himself. Like his personality was always there. Like even though he was in pain, he wanted to go and bark at the 60-60 men. And he couldn't keep him like from just not running around and doing crazy shit. So it was very difficult to keep him contained. But so we eventually get through that and everything has been fine. And then about 4 weeks ago, he came into the house one night and he was just sitting looking at me. And all of a sudden, like he started wincing and crying and I couldn't figure out what was happening. I couldn't touch him. We couldn't get close to him. He was just like in agony. And so we try and settle him and eventually you get him calmed down. Like we get him lying flat. We can kind of isolate that it's happening to the, whatever's happening is happening to the paw. So we rested on a pillow for him. Like, you know, we're making comfortable, give him as much pain meds as possible. The vet by now is a good friend and like he's on speed dial. So I'm like, what's happening? What should we do? And we both come to the conclusion that this must be some sort of muscle injury that he's, because he goes crazy outside. So we thought he might have run down the stairs and into the wall, or maybe strained a muscle. And the next morning when he wakes up, I see like this entire shoulder and breast, one side of his breast, like sort of swollen. And so we thought, okay, that actually just confirms it, that he must have torn a muscle. But then days go by and doesn't really get better. And a week goes by and doesn't really get better. Eventually he goes to the doctor because he had to go and look at something else. And while we're there, we thought, let's do a biopsy. And he does the biopsy, comes back initially as like, okay, this might just be a hematoma. But then when he goes to go see the doctor again, we realize that this thing is changing, like the shape of it's changing, the consistency of it's changing, but it's also not going down, not getting better. And so the doctor decided to do a different biopsy. And he said the moment he did that, he realized that the cancer was back. And that what most likely actually happened is that he ran down into a wall like you thought, but that it kind of impacted a cancer nodule or pocket and it just exploded. And what we saw previously with this other cancer as well was that it grew very quickly. Like once it was exposed to like a trauma, it just like flared. And so when we realized like it was the cancer and the cancer was back, I had to start talking about, you know, what are some of the options going forward? And unfortunately with the size that it was, and the type of cancer that it was, there was really no other way. There was really no other way than to just, we had to let him go. And I swear I would have done everything and anything that I possibly could have done to make sure that he's still with us, but not at the cost of him having to suffer. And so it happened so quickly because on the Thursday, we still thought that, oh, this is muscle. It's going to be fine. And then by the Friday, we had to start talking about, well, what are we going to do if we have to put him down? And so we finally came to the decision that we have to let him go. We can't let him get to the point where he's going to suffer. He was already spending 95%, 98% of his day just lying down. And that wasn't Axel. You know, previously, when he injured his foot, like I said, he was still being arrogant, confident, running around, barking at things. We had to keep him like contained. This time around, it wasn't that. He was just lying around. We had to beg him to eat. I had to hand feed him. I had to carry him outside. So he was in pain and just wasn't himself anymore. And so we said, well, how can we just like make sure we have one last good day with him then? Because the options are that we either wait until he's really suffering and then we let him go, or we have a good day with him, do all of his favorite things, and then send him off on that note instead. And so two Saturdays ago, we woke up, I put him on the bed, because he hasn't even been on the bed with us. I put him on the bed to wake up with Dan on the bed. We took him to the ocean, and even there, like, he wasn't running amok the way he usually would. He was just kind of sitting to the side. We had McDonald's burgers with him, and then the vet came to the house because I didn't want to take him into like a cold steel room, you know. So he came to the house, and we had to let him go. So that's a brief but long history of what's been happening. And since then, dude, it's just been, I don't really know how to describe it. Like, he's here one moment and then he's just gone. And I don't really know how to explain that, because it feels so surreal. It still doesn't really feel like this is the way that life is going to be moving forward. But having said that, so, you know, I've been processing a lot, and there's a few things that have kind of popped up for me in the meantime, things that I've heard, things that the TikTok algorithm are so good at targeting you with once it, I don't know, like how it picks up on everything that's going on in your life and it just targets you with the right things. So I have a few things, three things that I want to share, but any emotions you wanted to say, yeah.
Before you do that, tell us more about his personality, you know? Just tell us a little bit more about him.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was so handsome and so proud, you know? He was so full of, like, almost like to the point of like, just check me out. Like, I'm he was just so full of his own energy, and
He had a confidence that was bordering on arrogance, like, for sure. And that from the youngest age when we had him, like, he had this thing where he would come and sit on you. And I think it's just like his way of like showing, like, I'm the boss here. And like, literally, like we were going through Dan's photos, and he's like, oh, here he's sitting on Dan, here he's sitting on Dan, here he's sitting on Dan. And like, he would get on top of the couch to get on top of you, just on top of you. And he had this thing in the park always, and where it, like, if a dog was approaching him, he would go lie down on his haunches first and then go up and meet them. And initially thought, oh, that's so cute because he's submitting to them. And then a behaviorist was like, no, he's stalking them.
He wants to kill them just slowly. Yeah.
I called him King Axel, because that's really, right, that was his personality. He ruled everything and everyone, and he was very, very vocal. He was so good at telling us what he needed, where he needed it, if he wanted food, if he wanted attention. Like, he was extremely articulate in helping you to understand that. So, yeah, if I had to, confidence is what stands out for me above everything else. And then if I had to add anything else to that, it would be just his extreme, like, love for adventure, and especially the ocean, but like, just in general, like, he just wanted to do things and experience life and have fun. And he was either a 0 or 100 dog. Like, there was just no in between with him.
Yeah.
You know,
dogs also are terrible energy managers.
Yeah.
Like, go to death and then drop and sleep for a bit and then run again. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's partly also what's been tough, is that, you know, I think Jaeger got to borrow a lot of that from Axel.
Yeah.
And like, it was funny, because always in the front, Jaeger would be the one that alerts you, like, oh, there's a Checker 60 guy here. And then the brawler just comes through the house, like, literally, like, run, like, doors off hinges and stuff just to get to the 60 men as quickly as possible. So yeah, that was his personality, like, all out, confident, like, life-loving boy.
And tell me, he became such a great older brother for Jaeger. And how did that relationship happen? Yeah. Because, I mean, did he take him on straight away as a younger brother? Like, how did that roll out?
Yeah, I mean, Jaeger came to us about 3 years after Axel. And Jaeger, Axel came to us from Durban when we were still in Joburg because Dan saw him online and she was like, that's the pup. And then Jaeger, I was scrolling Facebook one day and I saw this photo of him and I was like, no, like this is speaking to me. Like, I think we need to go and see him. And Jaeger has this history of abuse for sure. Like, we don't really know what his history is, but you can see he's been abused because when we picked him up, he was deathly scared of me.
I remember.
And I would walk into a room and he would run out of the room and we would look for him and he would be in the furthest side of the yard under a chair, like just cowering.
Wow.
And so initially he didn't even respond to Axel. He was just scared of everything. And then I think eventually he started, you know, where Axel went, Jaeger would go. And what Axel would do, Jaeger would do. And so if Axel was running into the ocean, Jaeger would start running into the ocean.
Good.
And even the first time we took them to the ocean, Jaeger wouldn't, like, he wouldn't even go close to it. But then he saw Axel do these things and he started getting more and more confident. So, yeah. And then I think over time, they kind of became inseparable, you know, wherever the two of them had to be together. And the few times that we had to split them because Axel had to go to the vet or whatever, you could clearly see like the missing and the how weird it is. And now that Axel's been gone, Jaeger hasn't been eating. So that's, well, he's now started eating, but he wasn't eating, which has been stressful as well. And like his confidence is taking a bit of a knock. It's again, you know, I'm seeing that he's unsure, like he doesn't want to go outside. But also it must be so weird for him because I know he still smells Axel around the house.
Of course.
You know, we still have all the beds out. I still have his collar like with me. So I think he's smelling him everywhere. And initially it felt to us that when we went out, he was almost like, oh, we're going to go see Axel. We're going to go fetch Axel because that often happened as he would come with me to the vet to go and fetch Axel. So I think he had this built-in routine. Oh, we're going to go get Axel now. Yeah. And then it just didn't happen.
And tell me, was Jaeger in that room or in the house when the vet came?
I didn't really know what to do, to be honest. I don't know what was going to be the best option. I knew we couldn't lock Jaeger in the room. He'd be freaking out. And so, he was with us in the room. And it was quite funny because the doctor, he was great. He communicated well with us all the way through. And he obviously gave Axel a bit of a sedation before. And when he was approaching Axel with the needle to give him the injection, like Jaeger wanted to like really go for him. he was barking at him, keeping him at bay. So he was in the room and I don't know what that did to him to see, because, you know, carrying Axel out and all that. I don't know how he interpreted that. But he was there. And what, like I said, I don't know if it was the right thing or the wrong thing to do, but there was no other way really to do it.
And Eric, what's been the emotional roller coaster like for you? You know, like you got the five stages of mourning, and what's that been like for you? Where have you been? Where are you? Like, how's
it? Well, can I tell you about these three things? Because I think they relate to that question. So I'll take you through these sort of three things that I just wrote down this morning as I was reflecting on this period. Starting with like maybe the most superficial, which is that, like I said, the TikTok algorithm is great at sending you things that like, and I'd love to know how they pick up on it because I never did any searches for this or anything. But there was a veterinarian that popped onto my feed and she said that when they were in medical school, they were always taught this idea of euthanasia is there to relieve suffering for animals. And she said that she pivoted her career into being sort of looking after geriatric animals over time. And she said that her perception has shifted, that it's not about relieving suffering, but it's rather about preventing suffering. And that she has this saying, which is that you'd rather do it a month too early than a day too late. And it was so difficult for us because that's the, you're sitting in this kind of space in between, like, he wasn't bad enough. Like it was obvious that, oh, like he's suffering. Like it wasn't quite that. But we were also on the precipice of it, like it's going to become that. And so you have this internal struggle of, do you wait until it becomes that, or do you have the grace to go before it gets to that? And so obviously we made the decision not to let it get to that, not to let him get to the point where he couldn't even get out of the room, for example. And it was kind of affirming just to hear that. And I think it makes a lot of sense. And for people who might be going through something similar, you shouldn't feel guilt for rather letting them go early than hanging on, especially because it can feel like quite a selfish thing to do, that you want to hold on for you to have more time. And that's not in the best interest for them. So, yeah.
So I was going to say, I don't know, I remember when Superdog left, and I just thought I'd get it right, I thought something would happen that I would give him something that he'd be fine, like he would make it through. So I thought, my thing was always like there's hope for a solution somewhere. It wasn't really about anything else, It's like, and then when I exhausted the solutions, I was like, oh, I have to now, So I don't know if it's a selfish thing. It was more for hope. I was doing it more for hope.
Yeah. Mm. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And I totally get that. I totally get that.
Yeah.
But as long as that hope doesn't involve their suffering.
Yeah.
I think that's the tough thing to balance. So just at a superficial level, and when talking about like euthanasia, I think that's just something to keep in mind.
Yeah.
So at a deeper level, something that's been so top of mind for me is that, and this started for both of us during the pandemic, is that we both started talking a lot about dealing with endings, going into the wilderness and new beginnings. And so I've been sitting with that idea in the top of my mind all the time and playing with it in different ways and thinking about how does it apply to where I'm at and how am I really feeling about dealing with endings. And there's a few things that have sort of come up for me. The first is that when we deal with an ending, one of the most important things is to ceremonialize it and to ritualize it.
Mm.
And it's been so meaningful for me to do that. And I think I'm quite naturally a person that I want to be ritualistic. I want to have symbolism. Mm. I want to carry things with me. I want to have a visual representation of a thing. And so since day one, we've built a little shrine for him in the room, in the living room. And there are flowers around it. We had his collar on it. Every day since he's passed, I've lit a candle for him. Every morning I'm there saying good morning to him. I say good night to him when I walk past him at night. So that has been such a, it's weird because he's here, but he's not here. But that kind of, it to some extent helps us to still feel his presence. The second thing that I've done is I carry his collar with us when we go for walks. So when we take Jaeger for a walk, I've left his collar that I always used to take him with to the park in the car. And so whenever we get out and I'm taking him for a walk, I hold on to his collar because I want to bring him with us on the walk. So that ceremony and ritual, I think allows you to just not hang on for longer than you need to, but I don't know, it gives you something at a soul level that I can't really describe.
It's honoring him. It's honoring him. And it's the respect for him, and what he brought. And I did the exact same thing, when Superdog passed. I got all of his pictures printed. I went and got them printed. I stuck them up. I decorated his passing. I celebrated him as much as I could to give him as much respect and love as I possibly could. So I think it's a very powerful thing to have to help you process the process,
The second thing related to that is that I've been thinking a lot about like what is grief like, because everyone's like, it's fine, like it's gonna get better, and I'm like, I don't really know if that's the right thing to say, because I get the impulse that yes, the pain is gonna go away over time, but I actually don't mind the pain.
Yeah,
I actually like I've been experiencing it and I've been grieving and I actually don't mind it, because there's this combination of three things that are happening at the same time when you're grieving. The first is that there's this deep sorrow, and that sorrow is for, it's for the presence that's not there at the moment. and for the fact that there's a future that you're not going to have.
Mm-hmm.
That we had all these incredible things planned and that that's not going to come to fruition. And like, and that's why it's like lives, dogs' lives are so short, and we even got, we got shorter than that. Yeah. Like we knew that we only had 12 years with him, but like we only got five. So sorrow is the one part of grief. The second part of it is a very intense missing. And that missing is that, you know, when I walk through this house, I see him everywhere. And not only because he's like on my, my desktop and stuff, but because my chair where he used to lie when we recorded our episodes is empty. Like the that spot underneath my desk is empty. Him at the front door, it's empty. And on top of that, the silence is just there. There's no, his barking for attention or for food or for, you know, time to go for a walk.
The enemy of 66.
Or the enemy, yeah.
The enemy.
All that's gone. And so it's just, it's quiet and it is empty. And so there's this real deep missing. But then the third part, which I think is, which has been part of grief for me, which I found interesting and surprising, is just immense and deep gratitude.
Gratitude, yeah.
For the time that we did have with him. And I've said to Dan, if we could go back in time and you told me I could only have 5 years with him, I would do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, absolutely.
In a heartbeat. Because what he unlocked in me, what he unlocked in us as a couple, what he enriched our lives with is beyond measure. And so there's this, at the same time, there's just this immense gratitude for the fact that I had him as a part of my life for even just a small fraction, which was 5 years. And knowing that those 5 years will live in me for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And so it's been interesting to me that when I'm going through this grief, I don't just need it to end. I don't need to rush through it. I don't need to get to the other side as quickly as possible.
Yes.
I'm actually okay. Like I'm okay with those three things combined. I'm heart sore, but I'm okay.
Yeah. You know, I messaged you when you told me, I said, sit with it. Just sit with it. And in fact, it's weird because you start enjoying it. Like your tears are the appreciation and missing. I miss you and I love you and I miss you all in the same. I call that conscious mourning. Mm. Like consciously mourn him so that it's a respect process. And I was in Mexico now and they have the Day of the Dead. You know, Halloween is a very different process for them. They put pictures of loved ones outside their houses and everything their loved ones liked. So if it was alcohol, tobacco, beans, you name it, they put it around that picture. And it was amazing to see because everybody had displays outside their house with candles, pictures, just so respectful and so... it was just so beautiful to watch because that's also thinking about death in a very different way. It's in a very respectful, appreciative, we miss you, but you're with us and here are the things that you actually enjoyed while you were here. And I think that shrine that you've created is wonderful. And then yearly, 31st of May is when Superdog left. And every year at 5:30, at 31st of May, it's always going to be part of my life, you know, moving forward. So I think you've done exceptionally well.
Do you do something on those days as well? Do you like?
I say a prayer.
A ritual.
It's been like maybe 10 years already, you know. But sure. Superdog's still on my phone everywhere. People still talk about him. So he's still around. And you know, it's so funny. Mm. The apartment I lived in, his claws used to make a noise on the carpet always. So you could hear when he was coming. But you know, when he passed, I could constantly hear those paws. And I used to think to myself, I'm just imagining it. And then let me tell you what happened is my friend Sean and Stacy moved into my apartment and they messaged me after a couple of weeks and they said, bro, we can hear Superdog's claws on the carpet. I was like, no way. Because I didn't say anything to them. I was like, I'm not going to say anything. I mean, and so Superdog was still cruising around. I could still literally hear his energy moving in between, you know. But I also think another thing, Eric, you know, to say goodbye to the spirit and allow it to move You know, you don't, and that's also a closure. It's like, thank you and journey on. Thank you so much for being with us and journey on. So that, and often what happens is we, because of our pain and we want to hold on to them, we don't let that soul actually evolve and elevate and move on into its journey. So I think this ritual and mourning it is very much letting go of that process. And the last piece on this, the last thing is, and I haven't said this to you specifically, but when they're alive, they help us open our hearts so bigly, like so much, like you never knew you could love so much. And then when they pass, you mourn so deeply that you cry away many other pains, many other processes that you never got an opportunity to process. And so they're a gift when they're alive and they're a gift when they pass, if you're able to mourn it consciously. And so I suppose, like, well done for being able to process it like this, you know?
I felt that. Yeah, I don't think we've ever cried as much as we've cried in the past few weeks.
You've lost weight, actually, you know? You've really lost
weight. Yeah, well, that's pedal. That's pedal.
What are you talking about? You've been playing pedal for the last 2 years. You didn't lose any weight. No, it's pedal. Okay, pedal.
One last thing I'll say is that, I think we've gone through, like, one of the trends that we've seen in the world is the humanization of pets. And I think it's an incredible trend that I hope just keeps to continue. Like, Dan has been talking about this a lot. She said she really hopes that when people look at the way that we've treated Axel and Jaeger, that it inspires them to also treat their dogs and their animals better. And when X passed, I mean, I got many, many very heartfelt messages from people that have gone through similar things. But even people who haven't gone through similar things, I think, sent messages that were very heartfelt. But none of them said, oh, are you just going to get another pet? And I remember, like, there was a time when if your dog died, like, the question just kind of would be, oh, like, so you're going to get another one, you know? And that's exactly it. It's like that's what you're actually saying. It's like, okay, like, it's just replaceable, you know?
Yeah.
And you would never ask that of someone who experiences the loss of, like, a child, for example, you know? You would never just go, okay, well, you have another one. And I think people understand that the love and the care and the relationship that develops with dogs, especially, I mean, I'm biased towards that, but I think has taken on a new meaning, and there's a very deep level to that. It's not like in the past where a dog would just live outside and that's it. You know, they're a deep part of the family. And so I've been very happy to see that there's been a shift in how people think about animals in this regard. But listen, thank you for the space to talk about this today, to honor Axel, to, you know, he's been a part of the pod.
I mean, of course,
pictures of him as well, like on the mic. And so,
and you know, from the beginning, Eric, from the beginning, it was absolutely okay for him to be barking. There was never an iota of irritation. It was like, oh, cool. Axel's part of it. He's part of this conversation. And so he's always been a very welcome part of it, you know. I unfortunately never met him, but I watched him integrate into your life and into your world and across your socials. And it's been amazing to watch him change you, you know. And I wrote a tribute to Superdog that he changed my relationship with all animals. You know, I actually went vegan because of Superdog, because I was like, I don't want to eat other animals, because just because I'm not spending time with them doesn't mean they don't have personalities. And Superdog really opened up that for me, you know? But I think as we evolve and elevate consciously, we realize that everything in nature is communicating to us, is engaging with us, is symbiosis with us. And if you just go back 150 years, and I'm sure I've said this in the pod, but it was a while back, is we had slavery that dehumanized people And it was at a point where we thought it was normal to be like that. You know what I mean? The slaves thought it was normal. The slave owners thought it was normal. And then as consciousness grew, we were like, hang on, what the hell are you doing? This is ridiculous, actually. And then the next phase, once we abolished slavery, thank God, is women weren't allowed to vote. God forbid women are able to vote. That was illegal. Mm. And then there was protest against women. What a ridiculous... But watch how the consciousness changes. And so the next phase after women getting to vote, thank God, is children were put into camps to work and to be slaves almost back in there into the factories. They had to write legislation in Europe to stop kids being in factories. And so as our consciousness grew, slaves were obviously emotional. Women were highly intelligent that we were then giving them credit for. Children are highly intelligent. And actually by that trauma that you're inducing in them in that workspace, you didn't realize the impact it was going to have on the rest of their lives. And then the next phase of it is animals. Like think about the progression and now animals. And there was an Indian guru, quite a high spiritual guy. And he was saying, when you really wake up, you can even talk to plants. And you realize that plants are talking to you, but you're just not engaging because you don't engage with it. And so what you're talking about is the humanization of animals is we are becoming more conscientious. We are becoming more aware that everything around us is breathing and talking to us and engaging with us. If we're just still enough and conscious enough and our frequency is high enough, we become so obviously engaged with these amazing loving beings, you know?
Mm.
But for me, dogs are angels in fur. They're here to help us heal our hearts, grow our hearts. Their incredible purity is just, Dallas is full of dogs. Full everywhere. Everywhere you go is dogs. And just their purity, their pure intention of just wanting to say, hi, love you, what's happening. That's it. That's all they want.
Yeah.
And it's just once you see it, you can never unsee it. You can never unsee that incredible love that they have, you know?
Mm.
It's a blessing to have that realization because I remember when I was younger, my grandmother used to lock the dog up at the back of the house and I would never even engage with the dog. I didn't even understand. I didn't know anything. And I think back, even my mom, my mom coming from a Persian background, dogs were security dogs. They're like the old school. Mm. You're outside, you bark at the thieves and then here's your food and get out. Yeah. Mm. And my mom, now that she's really into dogs and the dogs are her whole life actually, which is a 180 degree turnaround for my mom, is she feels now bad for her previous dogs. She now thinks back and goes, oh my God, I didn't do this. Mm. I didn't do this. I didn't see this. And so I think it's been also an amazing thing to watch my mom change her relationship with the animal kingdom because of my change. Like Superdog sparked it at me, which has now sparked it at my mom. And now the ripple effect of that is global. And like you said, people even without dogs are incredibly sensitive to the fact of what they mean and how they engage in our lives.
Yeah, I must say my parents were actually here on the day that we had to like Exco and it impacted them deeply as well because he was so loving that when he saw them, he knew them. So when he saw them, he was so happy to see them always. He ran out and would pull them into the house. And so they were also here in tears on the day. I think they developed a very deep bond with him. And it's the same. I think in the past, I didn't have the same relationship with animals.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was also good for me to see.
Mm. Well, thank you so much for sharing, Eric, and for keeping it together. I was the blubbering, crying partner in this. You kept it well. Thanks for keeping it together for us, Eric. I remember I went on a boys' trip to Victoria Falls many years ago, 20, 30 years ago. And we hired all the scooters in Victoria Falls. And we were riding around and I came short, I fell off, and a friend of mine also fell off, and the two of us had to go to the clinic. So, but his grazes were really, really bad. And so we went to the clinic, and they fixed me up, and then the nurse and the doctor come to start sorting him out. And so he says, look, can you just wait with me just to support me through this process? Because, the one side of his body was almost all the skin was gone, you know? Anyway, as the doctors come in to start to sort him out, I faint. So they had to stop. They had to stop sorting him out. Even him, he had to get up and start helping me because I fell over because I couldn't deal with watching what they were doing with him. And we just laughed at that for years. We still laugh at it when I see him because here we are talking about Axel, King Axel, and I'm blubbing and you kept it together. So thank you. Thank you for doing that, Eric.
Thank you. Thank you for the space. Thank you for... we can dedicate a pod to him. It means a lot to me.
Well, Axel, lots of love to you, boy, and a safe journey home. And Eric will always have a soul dog, and the soul dog will always be Axel. Sure. That will never end. Sure. So thank you, everybody, for joining us for this, I suppose, I don't know, a very different pod and a very necessary pod. It's been a very tough time. Here I am. It's been a very tough time for me, Eric. I've been taking a lot of strain over the last 2 weeks because I've just been like, And you know, when I've mentioned it to my friends that Eric lost Axel and they hadn't seen it on social, they were distraught. You know, Joe from Dubai. Hi, Joe. I know you're listening to this pod. Joe was so distraught. And, you know, there was just so much, pain. Message, so much shared pain. And so...
Also, I just want to say thank you to you because you reached out to me a few times. And even though I didn't respond every time.
No, of course.
It was great just to know that you were there and that you were thinking of me. And also because I know that you can deeply resonate with what I've been going through. And so, like, those small little check-ins meant a lot.
Sure. Well, most of the check-ins had swear words on it. All my check-ins were like, F this shit. Fuck, this is so effing hard. It's my absolute pleasure. And we will continue to remember him and dedicate as many pods to him as possible in many good times. And so thank you, everybody, for joining us for this pod. And next week, we'll resume back onto normal expansive topics.